Welcome to the SEI podcast series, a production of the Carnegie Mellon Software Engineering Institute. The SEI is a federally funded research and development center at Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. A transcript of today's podcast is posted on the SEI website at sei.cmu.edu/podcasts. My name is Suzanne Miller, and today I'm pleased to introduce you to myself and Marianne Lapham. We're going to be, instead of just interviewing today, I actually get to participate. So Marianne Lapham's work focuses on supporting and improving the acquisition of software-intensive system in many different ways. For Department of Defense programs, this often means working with the program office to assist and advise on software issues at the system and or segment level. And she performs and leads research in software topics that are germane to acquisition of software-intensive systems. In this case, what we're talking about today, agile methods. She's been doing project management for over 35 years, so she's very versed in the traditional ways that people approach project management and software management. And then she's been leading the Agile research in ASP, the Acquisition Support Program, since 2009. My research in general focuses on synthesizing effective technology transition and management practices from research and industry into effective techniques for use in the acquisition of complex systems in the DoD and federal space. And I've been working with Marianne since 2010 on the Agile research as well. That's been my main focus in doing this. So when we talk about Agile methods, they all derive from, or the term Agile methods derives from the Agile Manifesto, which is a document that's published on the web. If you go to www.agilemanifesto.org, you will find it. You will find the four values that are the basis of any of the methods that call themselves Agile. And you will also find 12 principles that are the ways that you can sort of tell if you are actually acting out the values. And so one of the things that we found with DoD and federal clients is that these principles are a little bit new. Some of them feel good. They feel, you know, like they fit within the DoD culture, and some of them don't. And so we thought what we would do is have Marianne and I discuss what we've seen in relationship to each of these principles. So each of these podcasts in the series will talk about one principle, and then we'll discuss our experiences in dealing with that principle in the federal and DoD space. So Marianne, why don't you kick us off?
Thanks, Suze. The first principle, for those who aren't familiar, is our highest priority is to satisfy the customer through early and continuous delivery of valuable software. Now, all Agile projects try to meet that principle. And in the DoD, some do and some aren't quite so adept at it. I've seen a couple of programs that actually do it quite well. They get the code out there fairly quickly, within 2 to 4 weeks, and it's ready to go. It's potentially shippable. As you know, that's what you're supposed to have at the end of a sprint or iteration, for those who aren't familiar with the terminology. The problem they see is the guys in the field, if this is already a fielded system, or even if it's one it's being developed, they can't deal with that frequent of a release. So they lump them together, and then they send them out every 8 months, 9 months, 18 months, whatever it is.
So even though we're producing valuable software as a program, we may not actually get to deliver it in the way that commercial settings might be able to deliver it.
Correct.
So I've seen what we call a sandbox as one of the ways that we deal with that. So in a sandbox setting, I will put each iteration's software into what we call a sandbox area, and customers who volunteer to work with it, essentially to be beta testers, get access to the sandbox, get access to the code early, can give us the feedback that we need, which is why this is really an important principle. That whole principle is about getting feedback. If I continuously and quickly deliver software, real working software, out to people that are likely to use it, then I'm going to get better data about what works, what doesn't work, where my ideas and their ideas converge and diverge, right?
Right.
And so that sandbox is one of the ways we've seen that you can get that feedback even if you can't do full delivery out to, you know, a complete fielded setting. Now, the other setting where sort of delivery is a little weird in many of the DoD systems is embedded systems, right?
Oh, geez, yes.
So talk about that for a second.
Well, embedded systems, you're tied to whatever you're building. You're building an airplane or a ship or a spacecraft, you know, space vehicle, satellite kind of thing. And, of course, you're not going to deliver software to the actual functioning entity physical thing until it's ready. You just don't have half a ship that you put out to sea. So that begs a different issue of what do I do with the software that I'm getting out there? Again, sometimes they use the sandbox type idea. They don't call it a sandbox, but they'll have incremental drops and they'll have a test environment, kind of a test bed where they simulate a lot of the other systems so that they can actually check it out in a more operational environment. And there's a lot of testing that goes there, and again, they get the same feedback. So it allows them to find integration issues early as opposed to waiting until what we would call the big bang with more traditional systems where you don't do anything until the very end when everything is ready, and then you put it all together. So if you can do this early stuff with the software, that helps them be ready for when they do the final integration with the ship, plane, whatever the embedded system is.
Now, one of the challenges I've seen with that is getting user involvement. Yes. You can get the testers, you can get the systems engineers, you can sometimes get the program office people, but the most value is usually seen if, in the case of, say, an airplane, you get a pilot who looks at how the navigation system is going to work and talks about, well, yeah, but when I'm doing this, you know, something else is going to be distracting me. So that is one of the things, and there's really the solution to that is, I think, in many cases, it's getting people more aware of what the benefit is of having that early involvement, because it does take work for somebody to go out of their operational setting, come into the program office, look at the software, you know, go to an iteration review, play in the sandbox. But the value to them is that they get so much more insight into what's coming, but they also get to provide that feedback, and then we get to have a better system. And there are other principles within the set that sort of that drive you to take that feedback and use it. So this one is really saying do the first thing, which is do the early and continuous delivery of business value software, which could be operational value in case of an operational system. It may be business value in terms of bang for the buck, in terms of features in a new development. So that's the other piece of this, is that you're not just delivering software for the sake of, oh, I think it's cool to make this. You're delivering software that has value to the people that are paying for it and
right.
the people that
in
are using it.
In the eyes of the end user.
Right.
Now, one of the things a lot of the programs are trying to do, since they can't get access to the end user, and, you know, after a while, when they finally figure out, the end user figures out that, wow, this is really something that will help me, then it's easier to get access to them. But it takes time, and it's a different mode of operation. So a lot of times the developers will get what they call surrogate users, people that used to be in that field, maybe they were pilots and have retired but are still involved in the field and keep up with it. So they come in and they act as the initial reviewers of it, and then they go talk to their buddies that are still on active duty if it's, you know, for the military, and say, so I saw this great new thing and here's it, and they'll go, yes, or no, that's not how we do it anymore. We do this now. And so then they can take that information back. So it's that one's probably over a cup of coffee as opposed to actual field,
right.
But it's still information that helps.
And the other one that you and I both got to participate in, there's a program in the Air Force that every couple of years has a user forum that's an actual two-day meeting, and it gets like, it's like a little mini conference. They get like 300 people. They have 600 plus installations of their software worldwide. So all these people come together and review it and do new training on all the upgrades. I mean, so there are cases in the DoD already where programs that are using agile methods as the base have figured out different ways of doing the early and continuous delivery and assuring that what they're giving out is valuable software, in some cases to a very diverse audience. A lot of times our audiences are much more targeted, but there are some that are pretty diverse.
Right.
Talk for a minute about, so we've been kind of talking about release cadence, what I would call release cadence.
Mm-hmm.
Talk a little bit about early and continuous from the iterations viewpoint. So in most agile methods, you've got a release that is something you are intending to deliver more or less, you know, to an actual end user. But then you've got the iterations in between that are much shorter
right.
than we are typically accustomed to thinking about.
Well, typically what they do is they'll group capabilities. And maybe a capability will take 5 or 6 releases or iterations,
To get that capability.
To get the full capability. At the end of each iteration, you'll have a piece of it, but only a piece. And so then you'll get all the capability, and then if it's, say, 6-9 months, and that's a time frame where it's reasonable to put it out into the app, if it's an operational community, then they'll release it out as sometimes a beta, but sometimes an upgrade to the system, depending on what it's for. Now, the thing that gets there is sometimes 9 months is too soon. Some of the larger organizations, they just get something in, and 9 months later you're bringing something new. They're just basically finishing the initial
training on
the one you just had last time. So some of them only want every 18 months. In that case, you might have a couple of releases that go out at the same time. You have a release ready, and when the field's ready for it, you can send it out. In the meantime, you start working on your next release, and you have to work with your operational community or whoever your end users are to determine what that cadence is. It depends on what it is, who's using it, and how they can support. A lot of it's the training. Some of it's the installation.
And let's not forget certification and accreditation.
Well, yes, and there's
everyone's
all that,
favorite.
Yes. And some of it even involves, while a lot of testers are on board of it, some of the more operational testing organizations within the different military branches, they have their own way of doing things too. And sometimes the release may go to them first for their work and then out to the field.
So one of the things when you get into thinking about iterations, if you're approaching Agile, we've been seeing some really interesting things. Iterations in the commercial world can be as short as a week, and about the longest you'll see out in commercial is 30 days as an iteration. Now, if you're accustomed to a normal big bang, you know, big design up front, you go, oh my gosh, how can I get anything real done in 30 days? But what we're actually finding is I've got at least two cases I've seen now that use the 30-day cadence for iterations, and they operate really differently from the ones that I've seen that operate on two-week iterations. And there's something about the urgency of that two-week iteration that seems to do two things. One is you really do decide what really has to be in that, you know, what's the minimally viable product to get something real out in those 2 weeks. And the second thing is, and sort of driven by that, is it makes you look at your backlog of features and make them more granular, because sometimes you make things in too big a blob. And we actually had one case that we heard about from one of our programs that where they couldn't figure out how to decompose this one feature. And the most that they could decompose it would take you into a three-month iteration, which is very, very long. That's a release in most places, not an iteration. But they couldn't figure out how to do it, and so the manager said, okay, I trust you guys. If you think it's going to take 3 months, let's go ahead and experiment with that. And so they created a three-month iteration.
And what happened?
2 months in, guess what? They're coming back to the manager saying, this isn't working, and we're not going to make the 3 months. We're going to need another month. And at that point, he was a smart guy. He said, okay, wait, let's see what we've got. Let's stop here. Let's see what we've got. Let's break this thing down. Now, the good news is, after working with this, you know, big thing for 2 months, they actually then at that point understood how to decompose it to where they could go back to the two-week iterations. But, you know, that's a case where what he said, you know, hindsight's 20/20. Anybody says that to me again, our first two-week sprint's going to be figure out how to do this, because we're not going through that again. So that was an interesting, you know, case of we're going to go back to sort of something more traditional, but it didn't work in any case. But I think, you know, one of the things I'm coming around to as a personal opinion is try to do the shorter iteration, try to do the two-week iteration. And even if you have to do things like, you know, do a documentation sprint that's separate from the software delivery sprint, even if together it still turns out to be 30 days, you'll break the paradigm of kind of doing mini waterfall where you're trying to do all the requirements for the sprint and all that. You'll actually work more like we expect to work in an agile fashion, where you're doing real software from day one of a sprint. So that's kind of an interesting, to me, that's an interesting thing that we're finding in the field. And the other thing that sort of relates to that is if you're on that 30-day iteration, that's kind of like the you know, everybody's got, not everybody, but many programs have a monthly program review where they go over everything. And if your sprint cadences are on the same calendar as that, it doesn't really feel very different to the management. And so I actually think there's a thing about making it feel different by being on a two-week cadence. You actually kind of, you're not quite, you know, you emphasize the fact that this isn't quite the same as what it always was. And that's, you know, that's an intuition thing. I don't have data for that, but my intuition is that difference is one of the things that can make your manager start treating you differently, not just treating you like a one-month version of you know, the rest of the program. So
that might work. I never really thought about that. But one of the things I did notice, though, is if you allow it to go 4 weeks, or even some I've seen have been up to 6 weeks, the longer you allow it, again, people don't see the change, and human beings tend to procrastinate. And if I have 4 weeks, well, I don't need to do that today. I can do it tomorrow. And so you don't get into the urgency that really makes, I think, the agile processes work. Because
yeah,
people realize they have no time to waste. They really have to get to work and get down to business. One of the other things I've seen, too, is something they call hardening sprints, which also takes out some of that other stuff that you want
right.
to, you know, to get all the final, you know, when you're getting a release ready to go out in the field, there's all these extra things you have to do to make sure it's
right.
ready. You do those in what they call a hardening sprint. So it's a special sprint just for that prep stuff, finishing off, tidying up all the paperwork that needs to be done, whether it's documentation or CNA package or getting all the final approvals lined up and you have the package all ready to go. But you do that in a separate sprint so that it is different and you're treating it different and it doesn't get it confused and intertwined with your agile software development
right.
piece.
And you get a little separation of those. Of
yes,
those
and
issues.
A separation.
Yeah.
And again, I think it helps people change over to the new way of looking at things.
Okay. All right. So I think that's probably as much as we want to talk today about the things that we've seen in relation to this principle. I want to mention a couple of reports that kind of relate to this. One is a report that's coming out based on whenever you hear this. It'll be coming out in the first quarter of 2013. That is about what we call alternate worlds. And it is taking sort of familiar concepts from the traditional viewpoint and then talking about what is the agile concept that relates to that. So for those of you, if there are terms that we use today that you weren't familiar with, this is a document that should be very helpful with that. The other document I want to highlight is we published in 2012 a technical note on information assurance issues in relationship to Agile, and this idea of how do we get information assurance integrated into Agile so that doesn't create a huge lag at the end of a release is one of the things that's dealt with in that paper. So those are just a couple that relate to this topic that you may want to look at on our SEI website.
Actually, Suze, I think we changed the title Alternate Worlds to Parallel Universes.
Ah, okay.
But either of those titles, I'm not sure which one it is right now, to be honest, but if you can't find it in one, look for the other one and you'll find it.
And Steve Palmquist is the primary author, so that's an author. The Palmquist is a name you'll find
yeah,
easily.
Find it under Palmquist.
All right. Marianne, thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh,
I love
you're
talking
welcome,
to
Suze.
You about this stuff. In the next episode, we will deal with the second principle. And there are 12 altogether, so we will look forward to these conversations in the future. If you'd like more information about the SEI's recent research in general, there's lots of stuff besides just the Agile work that we do. You can download all of our technical reports and technical notes at sei.cmu.edu/library/reports-papers, that's one word, .cfm. This podcast is available on the SEI website at sei.cmu.edu/podcasts and on Carnegie Mellon University's iTunes U site. As always, if you have any questions, please don't hesitate to email us at info@sei.cmu.edu. Thank you.